Without any further ado, it is time to welcome Andy Cohen and Anna Sale to the Inforum stage.
Hey, everybody. Oh, my God.
That
my tequila on the rocks. Daddy got a drink. Anna, you really set me up.
Yeah, that is a way to start an evening, folks. Hi, everyone.
Cheers. Every time I drop a name, drink.
Hope we have some Ubers lined up. Hi, everybody. Welcome to tonight's program with Inforum from the Commonwealth Club. I am Anna Sale. I host a podcast called Death, Sex, and Money. It's the show about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more from WNYC Studios. And I am thrilled to be here tonight with the one and only Andy Cohen.
Thank you.
You know him from Watch What Happens Live. You know him as the executive producer of the Real Housewives franchise, all of them. You know him from his books, including his latest, Superficial, More Adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. And we called tonight's program Taboo Topics.
Oh, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Good. Great.
This
Let's go.
This is what we sold to the people, and it sold out.
Okay, good.
So we're going there, Andy.
I hope so.
All right. So in a recent interview talking about your books that have preceded this, you said, "Sometimes I seem like a Ken doll with no genitalia, like nothing really affects me." So in this book, I wanted to go more personal, more deep. And that is like catnip to me.
Yes, I have a penis in this book.
He does. So I want to start by asking you, I mean, your life is sort of so out there, whether on Instagram or Twitter or on live television or in your books. You've already published one diary of your life. So what felt the most uncomfortable when you were writing this book to acknowledge and to say out loud?
I think a couple things felt uncomfortable. I should predicate this by saying that I wrote the first diary, which was my second book, and I turned it in, and a week after I turned it in, or a week after I stopped writing that diary, I started writing this one. And I did that. I started writing this one really for myself because I was in such a groove writing. And I was like, I just don't want to stop. And my publisher at the time didn't know if they even wanted a follow-up to the Andy Cohen Diaries. And I knew that they were going to want one. And they did, it turns out. But it's important to note because I was in such a groove writing and I was just loosened up. And I said to myself, I'm just going to share everything in this book. And then when I go to edit it, I'll dial it back and I'll take stuff out. And so I wind up writing about feelings of loneliness, wondering what is in store for me in my life, questioning my life's value and, you know, what my ultimate kind of purpose is going to be. Is it enough? Is superficial enough? Is there something more for me? And then ultimately kind of trying to find someone and then meeting someone in the process of writing the book and then trying to figure out how much of that I'm going to share. And at the end of this book, I am actually kind of emotionally and existentially exhausted from reporting on my own life for publication. For real, it's kind of exhausting. Don't try it.
So we're going to make you relive all of that in front
okay.
of us tonight.
Okay.
The man you mentioned, Brazilian Andy Samberg, we will get to that. But I want to start with a question about money. Because you include an anecdote where you left a pay stub on your counter and your housekeeper, you were afraid, saw it. And the kind of shame and horror that she would know how much money you had made.
Right. I left a check, like a reunion show check on the counter. And I was like, oh, this is such bad form. And then I took the check, deposited it, came home, and then left my account balance on the counter. So it was like a double whammy. But I'm sorry, I cut you off.
The first question I had is, don't you have direct deposit?
You know what? No. I don't. It's so funny. No, none of my friends can believe this. I don't have a business manager. I have a financial planner. I don't have a business manager. I like dealing with my own money. I like getting the check. I like going and deposit. Waka, my dog, it's his favorite thing in the world to go to the bank.
Daddy's got the some best, money.
They have the best treats, and I deposit sums of money in the thing. I love my neighborhood Chase Bank on West 12th and 8th Avenue. And no, that's a ritual for me. I emailed my agent's assistant today. I go, did I get paid for my EP fees for OC season 11 yet? Because I don't think I have. She was like, you haven't. I'm like, what about Jersey? I mean, I do this.
So you get the actual checks. How do you feel like socially as you have made more money, become
good,
more conspicuously successful?
I feel very positive about every fucking cent that I have made. You know what? I feel lucky. I feel really, really, really lucky is how I feel. Yeah, for real. By the way, I feel lucky to be able to do the 8 jobs that I do. If they all went away and I could only have Radio Andy, I would be happy. If they all went away and I only had the Housewives, I would be happy. So the idea that I could do all of this and write books and all this other stuff, it's amazing. So I feel lucky for that.
And I think your career has been so interesting because you were very successful as an executive behind the camera with power. So you were earning money, you were earning power. Then you shift and you become an executive and an on-camera talent. Now more on-camera talent while also doing other things. I just wonder, have you felt as like your face has become more well-known and fame is more a part of your career identity, have you felt your priorities change at all?
I mean, I try not to become an awful human being, which happens to people. I mean, part of the business that I'm in is making kind of ordinary people famous who weren't famous before. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people react to fame in every way, horribly, well, do good, do bad. I think that two things helped me out is that I became well-known later in my life. So it was like I was already just the person that I am, and then I became famous, and I kind of slowly became famous. So I was like, oh, well, this is interesting, seeing this slowly happening. And I happened to have had a lot of famous friends before I became famous, so I saw how they dealt with it. So when I did get celebrity, it wasn't that crazy. You know what I mean? It's nothing that I really think about that much. Anderson Cooper says that I like being famous more than anybody else that he knows. And at first I thought that was an insult, and I really thought about it. And the truth is, I lived in New York for 20 years, and then suddenly I was able to get into restaurants. People were giving me things. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, I like this. Sue me. Like, what's wrong with this? Yeah. Okay, I like being famous.
It's great. So when the first Andy Cohen Diaries came out, Time magazine called it the frankest book about gay culture in years. And one of the points that review was making is that you were the last of a generation of gay men for whom long-term relationships were not thought to be socially sanctioned.
Yeah.
And in some ways, the review was somewhat unkind because it was implying that the moments in your diary where you talked about going to the gym or thinking about what you'd eaten, or, you know, the moments when you're alone in your apartment, that there was a loneliness to that
100%,
life.
100%, yeah.
Did you feel that way as you were kind of turning into your 40s? Did you feel like, oh, all of a sudden the possibilities of my social life and what's possible for me as a gay man have shifted?
Yeah, I think that there is a, you know, people my age who came up, it's like we just had this weird delayed, everyone's experience of being gay is different, and especially every age group. And I'm at this weird age group where I came out when I was 21, so I had this kind of delayed sexual. I was doing things in my 20s that people were doing maybe in high school and college in a weird way. And then, but also there was no goal. I didn't think, oh, I can get married and have kids. So that wasn't there. So I just kind of kept tomcatting around and having fun with, and my only goal was just happiness and career growth, which are great goals, and I achieved those. But in terms of my personal life, I definitely have had a delayed personal growth in that space. And that Time magazine review, it was funny. They said it was the most important book of our generation about gay life in America or something. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And then I read it, and it's like, because he's so freaked out about his weight and his body and how hard it is to keep up, and he's lonely and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, is this, oh, okay. And then, so I said to my editor, I go, just pull that quote from Time magazine, please, and put it on the back of the book. Andy Cohen's memoir is the frankest book about gay life in years. Remarkable, a passport into the world of celebrity. What it doesn't say is, like, he is a freak and a mess. We left that part out.
There is a moment in this book where you have come home from an event where you were flirting with someone who sent you a text message, and you're laying in bed, and it was a straight guy who sent you a text message, and it was a picture.
Yeah, yes.
Will you tell this story?
Yes. Well, what happened was, I had been, you guys are going to love this if you haven't read this in the book. It was a bartender on Watch What Happens Live. Actually, no. It was, we were playing What's Under That Kilt. And so, and we had three male models come out. And they and the guests had to guess, is it the Eiffel Tower? And they're like, yes. And then there was like a model of the Eiffel Tower. Anyway, so one of the models was straight but drunk and very, very flirty. And he did that thing where he was like, oh, I want a picture with you afterwards. And he took my cell phone and then took a picture of us. And then he goes, oh, text me the picture. And I was like, all right, I know this game. And I'm going to do it. So I texted him the picture. And I was like, yeah, no, you think I don't know now that you have my number? So so then I go home, and I'm standing there next to my bed. The dog is on the bed asleep. It's like a cold night in December. And so this guy starts texting me. And he sent me a dick pic, okay? I mean, which is, you know, pretty great from like, you know, I mean, it's like, so I was like, oh, my God. So I'm standing there. So out of nowhere, this mirror that has been leaning against my wall for 10 years decides to make a run for it and falls on me, on my head. And I fell on the bed while I'm looking at this, and the dog freaks out. My head is bleeding now. And I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, this is terrible. The dog runs in the other room. I'm like, help me, you ass. You know, so I leave and I go to the emergency room and I have to get staples in my head. And it was like, it was terrible. And I was, and Kyle Richards had been on the show. I go, you won't believe this. I am at the ER with staples, you know, getting, and she goes, see, you could have come, you should have come to Tao with us to get a drink. She's amazing. She was kidding. She's like, I'm kidding. Do you want me to come there? I'm like, no, it's fine. But yes, you were leading to a point about me being lonely or sad.
Well, the thing, I mean, the mirror coming down off the wall and crashing over your head is such a, what do you think that's about? What a metaphor.
I
something.
Know. Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't know
what. So, oh, well, I do. I mean, but by the way, can I also say when I got home, the dog would not leave his crate. He was so freaked out. And I was like, I need to snuggle with you tonight. And he was like, rah. And then I'm in the bed, and I'm screaming at him. He's in the other bedroom, and I'm like, are you not going to come in here? Come in here. And then I'm, and he's not coming in, and then I'm like, Waka, hey, buddy, want to come in? Like, I was insane.
Well, that's what I love about that story, because it also captures that moment for those of us who have lived alone, particularly lived alone in New York, when you are in need, and you know, you had blood dripping from your head.
Yes.
You walked yourself by yourself to the ER in Manhattan.
However, I did have a dick pic from a straight guy in my You tell me. Who won? Who won the night? No, I know. I mean, no, I know. I know. I know, Anna.
So you had two kind of pivotal conversations about loneliness that you talk about in this book, and it's a very Andy Cohen spectrum. One of them was with Naomi Judd, and one of them was with Diane von Furstenberg.
Yes.
The Naomi Judd conversation, do you want to...
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Well, she's nuts. In the best way possible. And I love a nutty lady. But we were sitting there and she said to me during the commercial break, I think, that I seem lonely or sad. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, I want you to come. She said, I want to give you my private line. And I was like, okay. And so she gave me her private. And she said, I want you to come spend Thanksgiving with me. And people from the South say, Thanksgiving, which I like. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to be with my family at Thanksgiving. But thank you for the invite. And she said, your blood will turn on you. And I was like, my blood will turn on me? My family is going to turn on... Anyway, that was one of them.
You later describe it as Naomi Judd trying to break up your family.
Yes.
And then a conversation with Diane von Furstenberg. One thing she says to you, and I want to know if you agree with this. She talked about getting older, and if you are not in a relationship, if you're single, if you're alone, that the risk is that you just disappear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what a scary, sad thought.
Well, I mean, by the way, in fairness to her, this is a pull quote out of a very long conversation. So, but, you know, yeah, we talked about the idea of aging and where it was a long conversation on a boat in Indonesia. Ashley Olsen was downstairs sleeping, literally. And DVF and I were going super, super deep on the aft deck. And it was the new year, 2015 was approaching, truly, and we were going deep. And we talked about, you know, what, you know, because she was saying, I've known her for some time, and she's great. She's kind of this mother hen, great woman. And she was saying, you know, why are you single? Let's break this down. What is it? And we were really breaking it down. And, you know, and she was saying, what is your goal for yourself in that vein? And that was one of the things that came out of the conversation.
What did you say?
What did I say my goal was? I think I always say that my goal is to be happy in whatever form that takes. It could be being a single dad. It could be being alone. It could be being with a huge family. It could be being with the guy that sent me the dick pic. I don't know.
I mean, does part of you very clearly have this incredible community of friends that you've cultivated over many
yes.
years. Does part of you resent the kind of nudge in this idea that poor Andy is alone when you have
no.
this incredible family that you've made?
No, because I think, as you see in the book, there are moments where, as you get older, and I find myself sharing this in the book after I kind of realized it myself, where, you know, at the holidays, it becomes like this moment where, and this is also, I now have money where I could go where I want to go for the holidays. And when you're single, it's like, look, you go with your friend. You know, it just becomes, the older you get, it becomes a little more complicated. And you do start wanting to settle down a little bit. Yeah.
So I want to ask you about...
I feel like I'm at my shrink, Anna.
Taboo topics.
I know.
Here's one little curveball
okay.
from... Also in that conversation with Diane von Furstenberg.
Yes.
She said, I picture you being very smiley in bed. And you said, no, I'm a very different person.
In bed.
In
yes.
bed.
And then she couldn't stop with that. And she's like, I want to know who you are in bed.
And that, yeah. I also wanted to know. You're not smiley?
It depends what's happening. Make me smile. I dare you.
Earn my smile.
Yeah. Earn my smile. That's going to be a new game. That's going to be a new Watch What Happens Live game. Earn my smile. Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, it's catchy. It's catchy. You are in a relationship now.
I am seeing somebody really cool right now, yeah.
And we learn about him in the book just as it's becoming public, and you're realizing that dating you for someone who's not famous is a whole thing.
Yeah.
His father at one point gets called by British tabloids.
By Radar Online. And if you're listening, Radar Online, fuck you. Sorry, you'll bleep that. Yes.
So, British Andy Samberg is, or Brazilian not British, Brazilian Andy Samberg. Andy Samberg, not British. Those are the tabloids. Brazilian Andy Samberg is a guy you meet, you start dating, and you begin to realize that, oh, I like this guy.
Right.
He's 20 years younger than you.
Yes.
What have you learned in this?
I mean, is it Maury? Come on. What is it? What have I learned about?
What have you learned in this relationship? Like, what's it been like? What's it revealing to you?
What's revealing to me?
Yeah.
He lives in a different city, which is probably good for both of us because, no, for real, it's like, it's just a lot. I mean, the thing is, it's really nice, and I don't want to, we're not married, and it's nice, and it's mellow, and we're finding our way, and I do write about it in the book. What have I learned? Is that what you said?
Well,
let me put it another way.
Because you are thinking about loneliness, you're thinking about where you are in your life, and then all of a sudden you're in this new relationship.
Well, what happens is, but it's not all of a sudden, which is a great thing. What happens is that I meet this guy like a year and a half ago, and we've basically FaceTimed every day for the last year and a half. And at some point, you know, 8, 9, 10 months into this, and he has a lot of ties to New York, so he comes to New York all the time, and we were hanging out. But at some point, you know, 9 months into this, I'm looking at him on FaceTime, and I was like, wait a minute. Like, I haven't found anything wrong with this guy. I typically find things wrong with everyone. You know, so the cool thing is, as it's going on, I ease into it, and I think what happened is I just opened myself up to the idea of you know, making, you know, maybe this could be something.
This could be nice.
Yeah. And that's another reason why I stopped writing the book. It was like, I just was like, you know what, enough. Like, I have to go live my life now, you know?
You have a very funny line.
I might have to take my sweater off. I'm like, this is like their, oh, Maury audience.
What's under the sweater?
Yeah, yes. Go on. Sorry.
You have a very funny line where you talk about being at the ballet and liking, and you like to look at the couples, in particular the ones with the age differences, and you say you like to guess whether it's a sugar daddy or a daddy issues. Is it either of those in your relationship?
No. No, maybe it's daddy issues, not on my part, but people like daddies, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. It's nice to feel taken care of.
Now that sounds like sugar daddy. Well, what you're saying. That's not.
Okay, moving on from Brazilian Andy Samberg.
My God.
Do you feel pressure from your parents to settle down, have kids?
No, I feel pressure from them just to be happy, you know, and to get sleep.
They really
want me to get sleep. They're very concerned about my sleep.
I love your mom.
I do too.
As I'm sure many
of you
do.
She's one of the great characters in the book. She is the best character in the book.
She's amazing. Yes. She is an amazing texter.
Yes.
One example, after your show, not a great show, but you look fab.
But she texted me one night, your show has officially jumped the shark.
When you think back over your the time of your relationship with your mom, when was it the toughest?
It's not, we haven't had, you know, guy, especially Jewish men and their moms, typically it's a really good thing. The daughters, it's a lot of service.
How's your relationship with your dad?
Great. Nicest man in America.
Aww.
Yes. Yeah.
Has it been strange for them as you have become more famous and more kind of clearly wealthy? Have you noticed anything shift in your relationship?
No, actually. No. They think, you know, I was home for Thanksgiving in St. Louis and I went to the mall and, you know, they're like, they think it's funny if somebody recognizes me, you know, and they are like, did somebody recognize you? I'm like, yeah, somebody recognized me. but it hasn't been. You think that everything's going to change and it's all going to become some big thing, but they're great. They really are, they go along for the ride. You know what I mean? Which is really cool. I was co-hosting with Kelly Ripa a couple weeks ago, and she and the producer called my publicist like a couple days before and said, we want your mom to come on and cook on the show. My mom's turning 80. She doesn't want to cook on TV. Seriously, as much of a ham as she is. And I called her and I was like, what are you doing Tuesday? She's like, nothing. And I'm like, well, you're coming to New York. She's like, no, I'm not. I don't want to do that. She's like, I'm getting my hair done Monday. I go, get it done Saturday. I go, I need you to do this to sell my book. She's like, okay. And she came. So, I mean, and my dad came too. I said to Kelly's people, producers, I go, she'll do it if you fly my dad in too.
Aww.
So, and they did.
That's nice. Yeah. I want to talk briefly about politics. Because
okay.
You have been quite outspoken about your displeasure with our president-elect.
Okay.
There was a moment, you did a poll over the summer on Watch What Happens Live.
Yeah.
Among your audience. Your audience.
He won the poll twice. Now, we found out that that Trump people had gone on Reddit and said, vote in this poll right now for the next half hour. So that could, because by the way, we had, I think the first time we did it, we had like 80,000 votes, which is an unusually high amount of votes suddenly for like a random Orange County Housewife night on Watch What Happens Live. But you know, listen, I'm in a tough spot because my audience actually doesn't care what I think about politics. And there's a reason why late night hosts typically don't say who they're for because they don't want to isolate half their audience. And I can respect that. And typically, politically, what I have been, you know, what I say about myself is I one of the things I am is gay. It's not the only thing I am. But if my rights as a gay man are ever in question, that is something that I am damn well going to speak up about on my show because nobody else is doing it on late night television. So if I have that power, I'm going to use it. You know what I mean? So a lot of times that's the kind of lens with which I will delve into politics. I got a little more in the swamp, which I hear is allegedly being drained, but judging by the people that are swimming around in it, I don't know. I don't know. I'm on a tangent.
I mean, do you feel like you have a certain, because you have a sort of fan base that's nationwide,
right,
at a time when our country is very divided,
right?
Like, have you felt that back from your audience in a way that you're able to communicate to them or they see you as their friend?
It pisses a lot of them off and they say, you're my friend and I don't want to, you make me smile. Why are you pissing me off? You know what I mean? And I get that. And I have wound up fighting with a lot of people on social media that I just shouldn't. And it's really upsetting. And I'm trying to keep it cool. You know, I am. And on the radio, I talk about it a lot. I have to say, I'm so proud of Radio Andy. We've got Dan Rather on every week and John Alter and some really good shows about politics. And, you know, I talk a little bit more about it on there. And I feel like that's a place where maybe I have more license to talk about it. I don't know.
You describe being in your hometown over Thanksgiving when the verdict after the Ferguson police shooting was coming down. And you were in your parents' suburb.
Yes.
And you were watching your parents' suburb prepare for the looting.
It was so embarrassing. In fairness to my parents' suburb, which is called Clayton, it is in the county seat of St. Louis, and that is where the verdict was being read. So there was a lot of hype that there was going to be looting in this bedroom community in Clayton, but of course they took it so far, and there was what I called suburban panic in this town, and it was just, it grossed me out. It was really bad. They took the art out of my parents' lobby in their building. By the way, it ain't Van Gogh. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, as if. And it's just like, it was embarrassing. And my parents were embarrassed too, you know?
And you talked about the people who worked in that lobby were people of color.
Well, that was the thing. It's like, that was the thing. You know, and I went... The schools were closed in the suburbs after the verdict for some reason. It was so embarrassing. And I went when those schools were closed. Nelly, the rapper, has a vocational school downtown in St. Louis. And I had a pre-existing gig to go speak to the school. And I went, and of course, Nelly's school was open. And here are all these kids of color who just want to learn. And... they're there at school, you know, and all the white kids are locked up in their houses. It was, I was upset. Yeah.
It's your hometown. This is where you're from.
And it's my hometown, man. It's a very segregated city. It really is. That's a downer, Anna.
Anyway,
go Cardinals.
I'm shifting.
Hey, by the way, I gave Hunter Pence a radio show on Radio Andy. Did you guys know that? Sorry.
Okay.
I'm like egging on the San Francisco crowd.
I want to know about how writing these diaries have affected your social relationships, because what's so fun about reading these is it is just one name dropped after the other. And there is a moment in this book where you're describing your book party for the first diary, and it's the morning after, and you notice that Jessica Seinfeld has posted on an Instagram that this stuffed monkey is giving your book the side eye because you described the food at Jerry Seinfeld's mother, Shiva.
Yes. And I went into a deep homosexual panic thinking, oh my, and that combined with I was on Howard Stern and he was saying, how can you write this diary while you're still hosting a show and living this life and people are going to not speak to you and... do you expect to be invited to the Seinfelds ever again? He said that. And then this post comes up. And it's so funny. Last Saturday night, I was in St. Louis over Thanksgiving, and I had the same complete and utter mental breakdown about this book. And I was like, I've gone too far, and this is bad. And then I went and saw a Grateful Dead cover band, and everything was fine. But, I had my moments, you know, and I think that I rode the line. And I think that some people, I don't know, you know, I think Taylor Swift probably won't ever talk to me again. But then again, she never really talked to me anyway. So, I think I rode the line. I think that some of my friends, John Hickey, who's the actor, who's a good friend of mine, who doesn't have the best memory about things that he's done, like, what did you do last week, or whatever. He was traumatized, because he and I hang out a lot. And I put us in the book. It's like, took a walk with Hickey, and we debated X or and Y. And I think he was freaked out, because even though he knew I was writing a book, it's like I reported on our lives together with a lot of different people, and Sarah Jessica included. And so... yeah, it is, I think I rode the line well.
Do you have a series of conversations with your close friends before a book is published?
I did with Sarah Jessica. There were three things in the book that I ran by her. And then Anderson, trust me. I'm trying to think who else. There were a couple other people that I just said. This story's in the book. I sent an entry I'd written, and it got kind of vetoed, and that's fine.
But mainly,
of course you have to ask. Mainly, I think it went okay. Yeah, we'll see.
You probably have thought about the nature of fame more than anyone in our culture in this moment, because not only have you gone through this incredible metamorphosis, but you have also plucked Real Housewives out of obscurity and made them famous. Do you have a sort of list of tips for how to deal with being exposed all of a sudden?
I mean, my biggest thing always, and I'm still telling Vicky Gunvalson this 11 years later, is stay off social media. Like, and you know, you can't take it into account because it's so hurtful. When I first went on the air all those years ago, it was like, it was pre-Twitter. But people would comment under my blog on the Bravo website to tell me how cross-eyed I was. And they just couldn't wait to tell me this. And that I had no business being on TV because I'm so cross-eyed. You know, and sometimes, you know, and it gets you down, whatever. And I'm pretty good now. It takes a lot to get under my skin at this point. It really does. But you know what? Imagine that you're a woman living in Orange County and you have a family and kids and you think you're all that and you agree to go on a reality show. And then suddenly, literally, 2.5 million people in America are judging the way you look, the way you dress, the way you talk. A malaprop, you said. The way you treat your husband, the way your husband treats you, the way your kids treat you, the way you yelled at your friend, something racist that you said by mistake, on and on and on. And there is no guidebook to handle it. And so I do give it up. And then you have to deal with me, who's asking the rudest questions. You know what I mean? So there is, in fairness to them, there is no guidebook for this stuff. And so I do tell them just, because the problem is also, the show will premiere, and then people are tweeting them like, "You are so fierce. You're amazing." Da, da, da. You know, and then the next week, you come off horribly, and it's like, "I hate your guts. You're horrible." You know. So,
you had a dream that you write about in this book, that there was a style section piece in the New York Times about you.
That was after the Andy Cohen Diaries came out.
Yeah.
I dreamt that there was a complete hatchet job on me in the New York Times. And this came after I was told by someone at the New York Times who had thought that he was going to write something about me that the New York Times, quote, has Andy Cohen fatigue and will not be writing the piece. So then I had kind of an existential moment where I was like, what does it mean that the old gray lady is fatigued with me? And yes, I had that was the moment, that was around the moment of the breakdown about what have I done with this book.
I thought the most interesting part of that story was that you have this nightmare that this hit piece goes out in the New York Times, and you had the willpower not to read it.
And at least, and I knew it was there, and in the dream, I was so proud of myself throughout for not reading it. You're so
right. They say horrible things about me, but I'm strong enough not to look.
Yeah, in the dream, I didn't read
it. I have learned about celebrity.
Yes, and yes. I woke up so proud of myself. That's true. It's really funny. Laughing at my own joke.
I want to ask you about drugs.
Okay. Talk a lot about that in the book.
You talk about drugs. You talk about your secret medicine on book tour.
Yes. Pot lollipops.
Pot candy.
Yes, and I do talk, by the way, I talk about my last book tour extensively, and I talk about, I do want to say this is my third time here with the Commonwealth Club. This is my favorite, you guys. First of all, I love San Francisco so much. I think it's like the Emerald City. I say this every time. I love it. But the people here that I'm, the spirit and the love and the energy is so unique and great. Not to mention that people here for some reason bring me joints, poppers, pop medicine, always. It's great. So anyway,
We'll see if you guys are three for three tonight.
He got five penis pastries last time.
Right,
we want to know how many penis pastries you brought him tonight.
Right, yes. But I talk about drugs, yes.
You talk about drugs. Are you currently, did you have a pot lollipop before you came on stage?
I did. I had a teeny little piece of a sucker, but it didn't do anything.
Oh. Have you... what do you notice about your use of pot? Like, when do you use it more and when do you use it less?
I don't... Oh, you know what? I never use it. I've never... It's so funny because I'm going to say almost every night. I think my eyes are just routinely bloodshot from my contacts or I don't know what. But when I tell you, I have never been on the air stoned ever. I would never do that. I really wouldn't do it. But people always think I'm stoned on the air. I did a Facebook Live today, and people were like, "You are so high." I'm like, "I'm just being me, guys." So there was, on the last book tour, I did have a lot of pot lollipops because you have to understand, you could be signing 500-600 books in a sitting, and you want to have the patience to connect with everybody and have a good time and whatever. And because I can get impatient sometimes and I like to. So anyway, I don't know. I'm not going to apologize for it, but it is what it is. And I enjoy it. And I don't, you know, and there you go. It's legal in California. So
it's true.
One of the lovely surprises of the election. But apparently the new attorney general is like the most anti-marijuana. He hates gay people, marijuana. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And he might be a little racist, but whatever.
I have one more Real Housewives question.
Okay.
So these women are in your life. They are calling you on your cell phone.
Yes.
You are at the dog park and you are talking to them. You are negotiating with them. Who was the hardest to let go?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that year that we got rid of the four New York housewives at once, Jill Zarin, Alex McCord, Kelly Ben-Simone, we did a massive thing. And it was like as much as exciting as it was in some weird way, it was, you know, Jill and Alex, they had been there from the beginning. And I was speaking, I remember exactly the couch. I remember what I was looking at, talking to them on the phone, and they were really upset. And it was, you know, so that was hard because they had been there at the beginning. They were the originals and saw the whole thing blow up and become this cultural phenomenon.
And you were saying, it's over.
No, and I was like, I said what I always say, which is once you're it's like the mafia. Once you're a housewife, you're always a housewife. And it's true.
It's sort of true. You're not going to be on TV anymore for now. We're going to start taking your questions in about 5 minutes. We're going to have microphones circulating. So think about your questions. I want to know about your apartment. Because you are in the midst of a major renovation.
Yes.
During these diaries.
Yes, I am. I think in the first book, in the first diary, I bought the apartment upstairs. And then in this book, I go through renovation. I add a studio apartment to it. And I am not moved in by the time the book ends, but I am moved in now. And I have to say, I feel like a king.
And one moment, you are making decisions about tile, you're making decisions about colors, and then there's a moment where you pause and you say, what if I make my dream apartment and the person who I fall in love with doesn't want to live here?
Yeah.
So it made me think, like, you have such a big life that you have created.
Yes.
Has it been difficult to make room for someone else? And to sort of mourn kind of what your life
No,
was.
Because this is, as I said, it's just been so natural and organic and one step at a time. And he's in another city. It's just been lovely and just very, just organic. I keep saying organic, but it just has. So it hasn't been, you know, it's just been nice. And he loves the apartment. And I think that, but I do have a big life. And I think he's a really smart, unique guy who fits in well. And I respect him immensely. And yeah.
You said last time you were here that your fantasy has been to move to an island, to get off Instagram and Twitter, and be a bartender.
Yeah.
Is that still your fantasy?
You know, it kind of is. I mean, look, I am at heart kind of a hippie. I mean, I am a deadhead. I love the beach. I am a pothead. I mean, so there is a fantasy. And I have to say, tonight, I was thinking, and I've been noticing it, since I've been on the book tour, actually, which has been the last, because you're alone a lot and you're just traveling and you're in different cities. And I've been spending even more time on my phone. And I have to figure out a plan for myself because it's disgusting and it's not cool.
If your mom was going to text a review of our conversation tonight, what do you think she would
say? Oh, I think she would say, I think she would love it because it was very, you did a great interview, and the one of the things I loved...
You were supposed to say a joke. I was
No, she would say, that was good, lay off the pot talk.
Okay, let's take some questions from the audience. Who has our first question?
And if we can turn the lights so that the house lights are up, I would love it.
All right, hi, Andy, all the way in the left, all the way in the back over here.
Hi.
Hi, Andy.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, before I ask my question, that it was a dream of mine to come and see you tonight, and I appreciate, when I watch you on your show, how joyful you are, and you always bring a smile to my face, and if I'm having a bad day, you make me feel happy, so I wanted to say thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It makes me happy doing the show.
My question is about the Housewives, because I love Orange County and I love Atlanta. Those are my two that I watch. Do you already have in your mind the next cities, or is that
I think we're good. I mean, I said we were good before we added Potomac and Dallas, but I do, I feel pretty confident that we're good. We have cast in San Francisco like 8 years ago, and we didn't find a good group, and it's cool. You guys don't need it.
Who has the next question?
Yes. Hi.
Live. I think it's an incredibly creative show. It's really unique. And I'm wondering, I've noticed that some other shows have appropriated some of your shtick with.
I've noticed that too.
And so, how do you feel about that? And have you approached anybody and said, "Hey, that's my stuff"?
I talk about that in the book a lot, about kind of what goes through my mind in various moments. And I think it's. At first I would want to tweet at, I mean, Good Morning America was like years ago. I was like, wait, that you're using our graphics now. Like what? So, but you know, and you want to start tweeting and going nuts. But the truth is that I'm sure there are things on my show that I'm doing that Rosie O'Donnell was, you know, no one, everything is circular and you just try to be cool about it. You know,
what are you proud of innovating in that space? Like when you think of your
show?
I'm
just proud that I think it's like no other show in America. I think it's like I think that it is a uniquely authentic experience. It's the only live show in late night. Thank you. We have this little studio. We're actually drinking. It's the only interactive show in late night. And I think that people know that when a celebrity comes on my show, I'm going to go there in a way that none of the other guys do, because my broadcasting role model is more in the Howard Stern variety, yet celebratory. I don't want anyone to leave mad at me. I'm not trying to be awful, but like, I want to go there, and I do, and I think that that's different, and I just think it's a totally... I think because of the live thing and because we don't pre-interview our guests, and so it's not canned and packaged and them telling a story. The guest doesn't know where I'm going to go either. It's a totally unique half hour.
Who has the next question?
We have one upstairs, center left.
Hey.
Hi. Hey up there. Hey from upstairs. I have a very serious question for you, Andy.
Is it? Nick. Is it? What are you doing here without Dorinda?
You made it nice.
You made it nice.
Okay, so Mary, Bang, Kill.
Okay.
Tom Schwartz, Tom Sandoval, or Jax? Oh.
This is a little Vanderpump Rules. Oh. Okay, I'm going to marry Tom Sandoval because he's a pretty little anime character. I mean, so many have banged Jax. You kind of want to see what it's like. I think I would, but like three condoms, and then I would kill Schwartz.
All right, we have, we have a question over here on your left.
Hi.
Hi, Andy.
Hey.
I have a serious and a fun question. It's kind of in the same. My serious question is, with the groundbreaking show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and Housewives using their term reading and shade and all that stuff that was like pioneered by the AKE community, do you ever think that we are going to become so mainstream that we're going to lose a sense of individuality and that we will never be able to keep a sense of identity because we've become homogenized? That being said, I want to also know the shadiest read that you think ever came out of a housewife.
The shadiest read ever to come out from a housewife was when Phaedra it was like two or three reunions ago where she went into this Mount Olympus speech at Kenya about everything wrong with her that made her have to go to a guy who was ejaculating in a cup to get pregnant. Like, it was like 18 reads on top of each other. And in terms of your very prescient question about gay culture, look, I think that the more you don't become a persecuted culture whose rights are in violation, the more rights you get, the more you do become like everyone else. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. I just think it's maybe evolution. And I think we will always be us and we will always be special little guys and girls. And but I think that, you know, I will say, and this is not even being partisan, we have the most, and Donald Trump, who I think just will go wherever the wind blows, but Mike Pence, who is scarier than President Snow from Hunger Games, is the most anti-gay person that there is, and it almost seems like it is a prerequisite to get into Trump's cabinet to have voted against gay rights and gay marriage and gay discrimination in the workplace. It's a crazy thing. So unfortunately, I think that we are going to have to be louder than ever in the next 4 years.
Down here on your right,
Hi.
Right over, right. Further right.
Hey.
Over here. Hi, this is so surreal. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being authentic and candid. And thank you so much for narrating your own audiobook.
Oh, my God. You know how much I hated that, right?
And as I was listening to it in my car, I was like, thank you for doing it, though. Thank you for doing it, though. I really appreciate it.
By the way, she's thanking me so much because I'm bitching at the listeners. Like, every 10 minutes, I'm like, you know I hate doing this, right? I'm doing it for you. Thank me if you ever see me.
Yeah, thank you. I had a road trip from California to St. Louis when I moved for school, and you got me through Texas. So thank you so much.
I have to say, it's worth it because now I'm getting the best tweets from people who are saying, I ran 10 miles listening to you today. I drove from, 5 hours or whatever. So great.
It makes a difference. My question is, what is the dark underbelly of the fame that you've attained?
I think that the dark underbelly is that I was always the most secure guy on the block. And it does, when you put yourself out there, especially on a nightly basis, it can make you insecure. I'm good with it now, but it used to be when the show was on at the beginning, we would watch it
together. The staff would watch it afterwards and kind of do notes on the show and have a postmortem. And listen, it would either make me feel really good or really bad. And a lot of times it made me feel like, who do you think you are? Why do you think you can do this? And that's what other people are thinking about you. So I guess just that. Because otherwise, I think I'm a fairly level-headed guy.
So we're upstairs again with Lauren.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, Andy.
Hey. Oh,
it's my birthday this week. Long-time watcher, first-time caller. You are the best birthday present I ever could have asked for.
Oh, happy birthday.
I told my boyfriend that. He's fine with it. It's good. So I wanted to ask, if you were headed to a desert island, which housewife would you bring? And why?
You know what? This may be surprising. Gosh, that's such a good question. See, part of, I was going to say Teresa because I think that she is actually... Remember when she pushed me? There is something a little feral about her. And I think that she would maybe kill things and then skin them and then cook them. So, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? But then on the other hand, you want to bring, like, Radzi because she's kind of quiet and you don't want a lot of noise in your ear. You know what I mean? Like, it's there's a lot of ways you can go. Or you want to bring Nene, who's just going to be, it's going to be a party, you know?
All right, we have one over here on your left.
Hi.
Hi. Really excited to hear you on Bitch Cess.
I'm going to be on. Yeah, yay. I'm going to do it soon.
Okay, quick question. Breaking news, two things. What are your thoughts about... now I'm blanking out because I'm really nervous. Kelly Dodd's husband and his reactions to you on social media. Oh. And two, Sheena Shea and Shay announcing their divorce.
Oh, I know. I was actually saddened about that and surprised by it. A hush goes through the crowd with this Vanderpump Rules news. And then also about, oh, Kelly Dodd's husband was like trashing me on Twitter. I didn't know about it until I was on Andy Cohen Live the other day on Radio Andy and someone called in and asked. And then we found the tweets. I mean, I kind of thought it was hilarious a little bit. He was like, you got to get back to your crappy show and your crappy books and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, is this going to pay off for him? I don't know. I thought it was funny. And Sheena, I thought it was sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got another question on the wall to your right.
On the wall to my right. Hi.
Hi.
Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Yeah.
I was actually curious because just hearing it out and in your book and everything you've talked about, the juxtaposition of reality and reality, like... Okay. You deal in reality every day, but really the reality of your thoughts and everything that you stand for, how you kind of balance the two, because it's kind of interesting to hear you talk about it and then even seeing the body mechanics of how you react to it.
I think that's a great question. I mean, the truth of the matter, I think that in a weird way is almost what the book is about, because it is 18 different realities. And I think you said it earlier about fame. I have always been fascinated by fame and celebrity, and now to make people famous, to become famous, there are so many ways into that topic. And I think that this book and the last book are almost weird deconstructions of that and my reaction to it and my joy in it and my questioning of it. So I don't think that answered your question, but I don't know. I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi. Super excited to be here. As a local San Franciscan, we'd love to know what hotel you're staying at and where you're most excited.
And what?
And where you're most excited to have dinner, where you're having dinner, you know, tonight or tomorrow.
I mean, I don't know. The answer is that I'm really focused on signing all of y'all's books. And you can bring, I really respond when people bring like 5 books at a time and have me inscribe them as Christmas gifts. I'm not kidding, because it means we get more time together, and it means you've done all your Christmas shopping with the best gift that you could give them. So just FYI.
Andy knows how to sell books.
I do. Love you. Hi.
Hi. We're right here up front.
Yes.
Hi, Andy.
Hi.
Biggest fan.
Oh.
I've got a weird question for you. Personally, one-on-one, when someone gives you a medicinal caramel, do you actually eat it?
I don't eat it at that moment, but what I do is I stockpile it, and then when I need it, I use it. But trust me, it will be used.
Right over here.
Hey.
I have one question. The three-way. I just listened to Howard Stern today, so I'm very curious.
Well,
what's
the question?
Well, maybe you should talk about it for a second.
Well, sweetie, I talked about it for like 35 minutes on Howard Stern. Like, I mean, what? Tell me. No, tell. I'll tell you any.
Is there a sequel?
Okay. Well, that's a really good question, because they did come to my signing in Boston. I am very much in touch with them.
I think we should give some context.
The context is I met a straight couple in Boston on my last book tour, TMI, my aunt and uncle who are here. I wound up through crazy one thing after another, and read about it, hear about it on Howard. I did wind up having drinks with them and disrobing. I mean, let's get real. So the answer is that, and it was quite a shock to everyone involved. The answer is that they came to my signing in Boston. I am very much in touch with them, and they're great. We're no longer, and it's hilarious that my only kind of thruple is in. It's just funny.
This one of the sweetest things about that story is you mention after having this experience with this couple, the next day you're taking a bath in a different town on the book tour, and you talk to Jake, and you're comforting him that it doesn't mean he's gay.
Yes, he was really freaked out. The next day. And by the way, he listened. He is the biggest Howard Stern fan on the planet. So for him, hearing me tell this story on Howard, it blew his mind, and he loved it, every second of it. And which is, I mean, thank God, you know. And I called them, by the way, and I said, I want to include this in the book. Because the hilarious thing is, the night we went out, he said to me, you wrote a diary about your last year. Would you ever put this in? And I go, no. Meanwhile, when I tell you the next morning, I was like, every detail. And they can't believe. And then they also, and the woman who, she said, I just couldn't believe how much you remembered on Howard Stern. So I was really, and I go, yeah, no, I haven't forgotten any of it. But does she look like, she kind of does look like a housewife. Yeah, she's tall, she's blonde. But what was I saying?
You described her on Howard as a Jewish Rebecca Romijn.
Yes, I did. That's
very
right.
Attractive,
yeah,
woman.
Yeah, that's right. Which she loved. But there was something else that I was going to tell you. Maybe that candy did.
One of the questions, though, was, were you going to have sex with a woman at long last and lose your heterosexual V card?
Right, that I was going to not, you know, because I'm a gold star gay. And it didn't, I still am a gold star gay.
Do you feel good about that?
You know what? Well, it is what it is. It's not on my mind.
We have 2 more questions.
Upstairs.
Hey.
Hi, my name is Rochelle, and I love you. It's so nice to be here.
Hi, Rochelle. Are you a nice Jewish girl?
Yes, I am.
I figured.
So, my question is for you. I love Watch What Happens Live, and I love the whole live aspect of it. And I know you have some testy characters on there who like to drop F-bombs. And whatnot, such as James and Lala. Is there anybody you've ever banned from Watch What Happens Live or wanted to ban?
There are a couple people. There's an actress who, I'm not going to say the name, but who's been on a few times, who is so immensely popular, and I can no longer tolerate her in my brain. I just find her so irritating. And we have, and so is everyone in my control room. And the last time was the last straw. And I was like, you know what? She's banned from the show. But like, she's a big, it's crazy that she's banned. But I'm like, I can't fake it anymore. I'm going to start being nasty to her. I'm sorry, I can't, you know I say, oh, I just told you about a three-way with a couple. Like, it's like, can I draw a line somewhere? I mean, can a white man get a break? I mean, jeez. I give and I give.
All right, last question over here on your left.
Okay.
So I was going to ask if you still had your V card, but somebody just asked it. So that was my question about that. But as far as Watch What Happens Live goes, I saw Anderson and Kelly are on tonight. And I just wondered, are there a lot of nights where it's actually not live?
You will, good question. You will find that out actually in the book, because I talk about, we typically tape our Thursday night show. We 90% of the time, Thursday night is on tape. And the way that you can tell it's on tape is it doesn't say live in the corner of the screen. And I don't say, here's our phone number, call us. And I don't say, tweet me for questions. I just say, we have a lot of questions to get to. And there's no poll. So that's how you know that the show isn't live, just being totally transparent. And the way, and then you're going to say, but are the questions set up? No, we tweet and we Facebook. We say, we're planning a show with X or Y. Tweet us your questions. And then my producers pick like 15 great questions. And then they contact the people who tweeted them or Facebooked and say, do you want to call in to the show? We're actually taping it. So that's how we get our questions for those shows. But so because I was going to be here tonight, we taped the show with Anderson and Kelly yesterday. And I have to say, it is one of my favorite shows we've ever done. It's really good. But that's a great question. And you'll see in the book, you know, you'll see in the book.
Okay, we have one final question for you, Andy Cohen.
Okay.
And this is the question that it's a tradition here at Inforum.
Okay.
At this moment, in this country, in the world, what is your 60-second idea to change the world?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Okay. Legalize marijuana, no more plastic, deal with the plastic, figure that all out. Do the solar power and do the econ, okay? Trump is going to be president. We're going to have this Cheeto reality guy as president. So he has got to get his shit together and start figuring out how to bring us together, because what we are is we are two countries, and we have to be one country because we are one country. And the thing that unites us all is that we all love our country. And so we shouldn't all be fighting with each other about that. And so we have to figure out a way to come together as a country. What else? Fossil fuels, marijuana, gay people are okay, women's right to do everything they want to do, equality for all races, Black Lives Matter, bi superficial. What else can I say? Is that okay?
I think that's it.
Okay.
That's the to-do list.
That was such a... That was so, like, liberal. I don't know. Thank you, Anna.
Andy Cohen.
Hey, you guys, I can't wait to meet you all and sign your books. Thank you so much, San Francisco. I love being...